This is Radio Shalom coming to you through Planet FM 104.6. Shalom, Rabbi Alchul.
Shalom, Joan. How are you today?
Well, it's delightful to have the rabbi back in the studio once more. It's a festival and a happy time. Rabbi, tell us about Sukkot.
Well, John, we shouldn't be here at all, should we? We should be sitting under the palm fronds in the sukkah, sipping hot tea and eating bickies, I think.
And hoping that it's not raining.
Well, as they said in the old world, for Sukkot kommt den Regen.
How old is the festival of Sukkot?
Well, when did we leave Egypt?
A while ago. But we remember it like it was yesterday.
Absolutely. We were all there just like it was yesterday. It has been going on forever. They did Sukkot in the desert, and it is that we are remembering, amongst other things. Sukkot is, of course, also the celebration of the harvest of the first fruits, not the barley and the wheat, as we celebrate around Pesach and Shavuot, but rather the grapes, the figs, the olives.
Oh, the good stuff.
The dates, the pomegranates, all those things, and they were brought up to Jerusalem, to the temple.
So that's all they had to look forward to, because when they were in the desert, there was nothing.
Well, they were fed by the Almighty, so yes. they were not wanting. I don't think so. Remember that the man tasted whatever you wanted it to taste like, so... I mean, that must be any food producer's greatest wish. You just eat this gooey mass and it will taste like anything you would like it to be. But that's a different story. Well, so we've been doing it for the better part of, 3,500 years? Yes. At least.
So it's a long-lasting festival.
Well, it's one of those festivals that are mentioned in the Torah that are calculated amongst the Shlosh Regalim or the three festivals of pilgrimage, which of course is Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, where people would go up to Jerusalem and offer gifts of thanksgiving to the Almighty for harvest, for life, for everything connected with gratitude.
So it must have been a sight to see all the wagons with the produce going from all over Israel to Jerusalem.
Indeed, it would. And they would very often go out and tie a little band around a branch of a tree to sort of designate, this is what we're going to bring up, what will come here, the fruit that we will bring up. And then there was the whole... speech going on where you would remember, as a matter of fact, some of the words that we say at the Pesach Seder was connected to bringing the gift of the first fruits of Sukkot. And my forefather was an Aramean and so forth and so on. I went down to Egypt and we were all redeemed out of Egypt and so forth and so on. So it's also
the genealogy.
Well, yes, or the genealogy of a festival. Mm. Yes, yes. But there's much more to Sukkot, isn't there? Because, I mean, we remember that we lived in booths. I think the word, English word, booth is such a... it's a funny word, probably because I'm not a native English speaker. If I had to make a direct translation from what we call it the festival of leaf-covered huts, which is basically what we do. We build a little hut or a booth, whatever you call it, and then we put branches with leaves over it.
But I think it has evolved through the ages, because now you can get pop-up.
I think the commandment to live in a sukkah, because we say the blessing leishev basukkah, and as a matter of fact, it doesn't mean sitting in the sukkah. Leishev means living, in the same way that a toshav is an inhabitant. So we should inhabit the sukkah. Now, thank God, Jewish law is very lenient when it comes to observing the commandment per se, because, well, as much as we should build Sukkot, we should begin straight after the Psalm of Yom Kippur is out, when the fast comes out after the shofar blow on Yom Kippur. We should go out and put the first nail. Put the first nail in the sukkah, and we start, and the kids make beautiful or adornments, and we hang up fruits and this and that. I mean, and we make very festive in Israel, where of course now the weather is beautiful. People move out there. The only things that they don't move out there are basically their pots and pans, because it does have to have the air of a temporary dwelling and not a permanent one. And if you moved your kitchen out there, it would become more permanent. So, but people move beds out there and they live in the sukkah for the 7 days. Of course, we should, outside of Israel, do it 8 days, but That's the
idea. I remember
idea.
Lying and looking at the stars through the gaps of the palm tree.
It's fantastic.
As a child, that was.
Yes, but that was probably in South Africa.
It was in South Africa.
And the weather there was much better, wasn't
Absolutely.
It?
Absolutely.
Yes. Well, because, I mean, Auckland weather isn't always that hospitable when it comes to Sukkot. We try, nonetheless. Yeah. Back in Denmark, you know, very often when Sukkot would come during October, the autumn storms would have begun and you would get showers that would dilute the Kiddush wine so fast that we couldn't make Kiddush on it anymore and we had to run in. So Jewish law dictates that if there is any discomfort observing the obligation of Leishef Basukah to live in the sukkah, then you're allowed to go inside.
Well, I think they probably never thought of the diaspora at that time.
Well, one should I hope that they didn't, because the diaspora should never have happened, should it? Unfortunately, it did happen, and we did have to calculate it. But then they also had to take into consideration that the weather in Northern Europe or somewhere else wasn't always as hospitable as Israel.
And so one of the things is collecting the harvest, taking it as an offering.
Yes.
And the hope that it God will continue to bless us with more fruits.
With abundance, absolutely, yes.
And, but again, I think building the sukkah is a congregational thing that you do together. It's a family thing and a congregational, and it's always good to feel that you belong to a group that are doing things.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, as a family, if you've got children, it's a fantastic thing to do. A sukkah doesn't have to be very large. As you said before, pop-up sukkah is basically 50 by 50 centimeters, and you can just squeeze inside of it. It has the minimum requirements of meshes. A sukkah has to have 2.5 or 3 walls, and then it has to have something which is cut off the ground as a roof. That can be bamboo, it can be pine branches, it can be palm fronds, it can be anything, basically, that's cut off. And a living thing that's cut off the ground.
And so what does the service actually entail that we do specially at Sukkot?
Oh, that's another story, isn't it? Well, just to finish off, the building of the Sukkah as a family, it's a very interesting, you know, the children pass the hammer on to dad, who of course knocks his finger, and then mum comes and puts a band-aid on. So you're right, it's an activity for the whole family. the service, well, there is something special, because what do we do during the service? We take the arba minim, the 4 species. And what are those? Those are a citron. A citron is a member of the citrus family. It is not like a lemon or a lime in the way that it generally remains on the vine for more than 1 year. When we get them, and the most common species used in Israel and outside of Israel, they're only 1 year old. That means that they're a little bit green sometimes. Some use it without a little knob on the end, and some prefer it without the knob on the end. There are different customs and this and that. And as a matter of fact, picking out the right etrog is a science. It has to have no blemishes, no bumps, no nothing.
Sounds like a beauty contest.
It is. And they cost thousands of dollars in Israel. They cost thousands and thousands of dollars.
Do they grow them outside? Surely we can grow them here. It's a citrus comfort.
As a matter of fact, I know that in previous years, etrogim were grown in New Zealand. In the time of Rabbi Astol, they were grown here. And it was the city that grew them for us. But whatever happened to them? It's only what I've heard in stories.
Well, I think it's difficult getting them to be imported in because of our Ministry of Ag and Fisheries, who don't really recognize sometimes the odd customs of some of their religious groups.
Correct. I mean, I have learned that I used to think that there were two things in life that you could not avoid: death and taxes. Mm-hmm. Now I know that the math is definitely also on the list, because every year when we're trying to get in our lulav and etrog from Israel, it is a serious organizational scheme that we have to go through. My office is turned into a containment zone for authorized personnel only. I have lamps and signs and what have you not there, just to look after 10 little citrons, some palm branches, and it is something that we have to take very, very seriously. Of course, I mean, I'm not belittling that we have to watch out for our special nature and everything here. I mean, we've got
use the myrtles here and the willows and the...
Theoretically, if we could have the myrtle here, we could use it. Hadassim, yes.
We've got the willow, we've got the palms.
As a matter of fact, it's very interesting you should ask, because in Israel, what time is it? It's autumn. That means that the willow is blossomed 6 months ago. It's already well grown. But here, I've already been down to check my secret willow tree, because not all species of willow are acceptable.
Make that difficult too.
Oh, yes.
A willow is a willow is a willow.
No, milady, it is indeed not. A willow has to be a specific willow, and it has to have a certain look to it. And yesterday I found a question and answer posed by dear Rabbi Ginenda many, many, many years ago, mm-hmm, to an organization, a rabbinical organization in Israel called Eretz Chemda, that helps rabbis at the far end of the world making the right decisions, in which he asks whether a local species of willow was acceptable. And they got a professor in horticulture to have a look at it. And indeed, we found that this specific species was acceptable.
Oh, fantastic. So there's a help desk for rabbis.
Oh, yes, there is. There is, thank God, because sometimes being the rabbi of a small country is a bit tricky, you know. So
the willow is acceptable here, and I know they do grow myrtle.
Yes, the myrtle, we do grow myrtle. But then there's also a question of growing them in the right way. The willow sticks have
18 inches of sand.
No, but the length of them has to be 3 tfachim, which is around 33 centimeters. The leaves of the hadassim have to be 3 on each row of leaves. Oh, sorry, I'm bumping into the microphone here, trying to, you know, being a Jew, it's difficult to talk without using your hands. But they should sit exactly opposite each other, the three little leaves, and they should have a perfect shape, and there should not be a blemish on them. And you know, it's not that posh, it's not that easy just to go out and find a willow branch and then wave it around.
Right.
Yes. Or a myrtle for that matter. It's something that takes, and again, the palm front that we use has to be perfectly closed, not open, not squishy, and the straighter it is, the better. There's a lot of symbolism in these four species that we take and shake around. And I mean, that's the centerpiece of the Sukkot service, is that we take these four species that all grow close to water and are associated with water, even though we might say that, well, the date palm grows in the desert. Well, date palm grows in a wadi. And a wadi is, of course, a place where there's a lot of water.
Sometimes.
Oh, well, yes, but down below. And the date palm is an expert sending down its roots to find the underwater, the underground water. Maybe we can't see it, but the date palm's nose is there. And of course, the willow and the citron also.
But you said they have symbolism. Could you explain about the symbolism?
Yes. So the citron, for example, resembles a heart. Of course, hard is in Jewish tradition the place and the seat of intent and of knowledge. So, of course, that is bound together with the palm frond, which is the spine, and the myrtle leaves, which are the eyes, and the aravot, the willow leaves, that are the lips. Now, what, of course, the water association is, we're asking for water. But another thing that sometimes, or very often, creates problems, shall we say, is how our heart and eyes and lips relate to each other. Without the spine, of course, none of them come together. But our eyes sometimes see things which our lips relay, and it creates trouble, lashon hara, evil speech. But hopefully our heart will understand not to relay such bad speech, and we will deal wisely and speak wisely.
And be good and kind people.
Please, God. Yes.
So we shake it in, what, the four corners?
The four corners
something?
And up and down. Well, it's basically, we are trying to sort of, I think this is some of the things that to non-Jews seems like a little bit of a wuju-wuju, you know, like we do this, and then water comes. It is beseeching God to bless the next year's crop with enough water, with sufficient, because we're not asking for too much, we're asking for just enough.
Well, in New Zealand, they've had too much or too little.
Well, you know, that's what we can do with... But we're asking him for rain, and of course we're especially asking for rain in Eretz Israel. Israel surely needs water, and needs the water needs to fill up the Kinneret and to hopefully feed the people by watering all the crops. So yes, that's what we're asking for, and that's why we are asking for them to, we're waving them in all directions, that water should come from all directions. Okay.
And the decoration of the sukkah is really left to the imagination, particularly of children, because they're the ones that we want to get involved in.
Absolutely. Well, we have a tradition that the sukkah is sort of a powerhouse. It's a magic dwelling. And every night of the seven nights of Sukkot comes one of our forefathers' spirit to sit with us and to dwell with us. So Abraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Joseph, Moshe, Yoshua, and David. They come each on their night to spend time with us. And we welcome them every night in the Sukkah. And it's sort of a part of Gan Eden, of paradise, if you want, that we're sitting there and we're reconnecting with our history and our people under the auspices of God. Because that's one of the things that the Sukkah is thought as is, well, we get up every morning inside our nice and dry houses. I know, okay, maybe some of the houses in New Zealand aren't that weather tight, but most of them, and we're quite comfortable. Unless you lived in Canterbury, we maybe don't appreciate enough. But if you then go out and try to live in your sukkah for a week in New Zealand weather, then you surely start appreciating your dwelling, and you become grateful. But also understanding that even though we are in our firm houses, we're still in God's hands.
You said they built the booths or the huts when they were in the desert, and isn't it too because they were farmers that they had to stay and do the harvest? And they, I'm just thinking of the story of Boaz and Ruth. You know, that in fact they slept in the fields.
Well, that was during the grain harvest.
It was a different time.
That was Shavuot. Mm-hmm. That's why we read the book of Ruth at Shavuot.
Right.
Yes.
Because I always thought that they stayed in a hut then, but obviously they slept in the open.
Well, they might have. I mean,
because, you know, they said, well, the huts were there during the harvests because the people slept in their huts so that they didn't leave their fields. But as you say, that must have been when it was the grain and they didn't have to do that when they pick fruit.
No, I don't think so. But I don't know whether they went home at night. I mean, their plantations could have been far away. Maybe.
That's true.
Maybe.
Yes.
Maybe. Maybe they even built little huts for that. I would have thought they would have been tents, though. But
I just remember in Israel, as soon as Yom Kippur had finished, I saw them on the roofs because they didn't all have gardens to put the sukkah in, so they put it on the roof, and it seemed, you know, doop, and there it was.
Yes, absolutely. You know, many people have the ready walls. They just slam them up. It's like a little building set. You just, I mean, my sukkah is a building set. I have 8 panels that I just screw together with bolts and nuts, and then I...
So those are kit sets you can get?
Well, I
well,
sort
that's
of...
a good entrepreneur thing.
Yes, I invented it. Yes, yes.
Maybe we can export it.
I don't know. I think it's been done many other places as well. Mine are basically heavy wooden frames with tarpaulin extended over it, and it has to be tight. You can't have flappy walls. But it's very tight, and I had somebody build it for me. I just made the drawings, and, you know, I'm son of an architect, you know, I know how to.
And, so that's another skill that we didn't realize you had.
Oh, dear.
Oh dear.
I dabble a little bit with building. I just built a cage for my kids' guinea pigs, so, you know, I dabble around, son of a carpenter. Rings a bell. Sorry.
When you celebrate Sukkot, is there any sort of music, food, or something that resonates?
Well, that's interesting you should ask, because when I think about it, as you know, Pesach has matzah and knedel and this and that, and Shavuot, we traditionally eat milk.
Dairy.
Yes. Sukkot, what do we eat? Well, it's quite
fruit.
A good... Exactly. It's quite a good tradition to eat any of the 5 fruits which are historically or biblically related to Israel. So you have the fig, the olive, the date...
Pomegranate,
and grape. Those are the 5 species which are historically... biblically connected, because when God says it will be a land that's abundant, and he says wheat and barley, and then the 5 fruits. Mm. And of course the last one is Dvash Tamar, which means basically a date's running of sugar.
Oh.
Yes.
I don't know, too much sugar is not good for you.
I didn't hear that.
Right.
So I would guess that, you know, sticky date pudding would be a good thing. One of my absolute favorites. Definitely, that would be a thing to eat on Sukkot. But apart from that, no, I must admit, when I think about it, I can't think of anything which is sort of the thing to eat.
Because usually every festival we have, food is a very important part of it. And
I thought it was the most important part.
After the service.
Okay, thank you.
that sort of reminds one, you know, oh, it's Pesach, it's matzah, oh, it's...
I don't think there's anything to that extent at Sukkot that's related, but I might be mistaken. You know what, I'll have to look into that.
And what about music?
Well, music, there's a lot of songs, especially modern Israeli kids' songs, about building Sukkot and living in the sukkah and all those things. I think that's a very festive sort of thing about it.
I always think that festivals are great and they say don't work, you know, take it easy, but the mother always has to do the catering.
Excuse me?
The mother mainly does the catering.
Excuse me?
Oh, you share.
Excuse me? I mean, this kind of gender typical, I don't appreciate that, John, I must admit, you know. Listen, I married a modern woman. She doesn't cook that often. It's yours truly who does the cooking. So she's my beautiful assistant. But Then again, right. I worked many years in catering, so...
Oh, that's another skill. My goodness, he's a man of many talents, but...
Well, you've got to make a living,
perhaps,
eh?
Perhaps looking at the traditional, you think, well, it's, I have to slip it out a little further from just bringing it to the table.
Yes, that's right. I mean, many people use one of the walls of the house as the fourth wall of the sukkah, so that it's just outside the kitchen door.
Ah, clever.
It becomes an appendix to the house.
Right.
Because then you've still got three walls. The only thing you have to remember is that you can't have a fixed roof over the sukkah. You have to have it open. What in modern times they've done, they've sort of made a flip-down roof, which when it rains can be pulled down over the sukkah. Which is quite practical.
Very practical.
Yes.
Right. And those songs that we actually sing in the synagogue at the time, is there any special psalm?
Well, we do Hoshanot. First of all, of course we do Hallel. Hallel are the festive songs and words of praise. Hallel, Lehallel means to praise God. And there is reason to rejoice. It says that you should rejoice on your festivals, and that is including the three festivals of Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. And we sing, we give those words of praise, and Hallel is a very festive part of the service. And it's during that that the first time we take out the four species and walk around the shul, we do these Hoshanot. We encircle the Bama, walking around with the four species, and asking God for salvation. Salvation in the shape of water, of that he should feed us in the year to come, that he should look after us, that he should hold his hand over us. And that's what we ask for, basically, by doing these processions around the shore. Often led by, it's led by the rabbi, and there's a Sefer Torah out on the Bema, and it's very festive.
So we do, when we walk around, it's quite a few festivals where you actually parade around.
Well, certainly at Sukkot and then at Simchat Torah, where all the rejoicing and the dancing, I mean, that's a ganz etwas anderes. But that's true, yes. We do a lot of physical things in Judaism. We love making it physical, and so we can feel it and sense it much.
Well, I think all the senses are used because you have your hands that you're doing the shaking and the walking around, you're doing the singing, so you're breathing and you're doing the singing and the chanting, and of course the swaying.
Yes, well, shackling, yes. You don't have to do that.
It comes automatically.
It does, it's like music. It's because prayer has music. And it is quite an automatic. You're standing there and you shuckle. I swing a little bit. From, you know, people have different customs.
I find myself swaying that I'm not even aware that I'm doing it. But so it, I think it's something in your DNA.
Possibly. Yeah. It's the hopefully the prayer resonates in your soul, yeah. And that makes you like a metronome swinging a little bit.
So your soul is involved, your body is involved, your heart is involved. Would you like to give a message to the listeners?
Yes, I would like, of course, to wish all a Chag Sameach and a beautiful stay in their sukkah. There's a sukkah at the shul. Should anybody want to come in and shake the four species, or even to say the blessing of Leishev Basukkah, and that all should have a nice and dry and good experience.
And we wish you to enjoy as a family, as a congregation, as friends, the festival of Sukkot.
Amen.
And to enjoy the fruits. I think we are blessed here of having fruits. And don't forget to listen next Sunday at 9 a.m. when the rabbi will be speaking about Simchas Torah.
Please call.
And if you've missed this program, you can go to www.planetaudio.org.nz/Radio Shalom.
Stream it, listen on demand, pod it. Your favorite shows are waiting on planetaudio.org.nz.